the biggest improvements in information sharing, really it goes to the collaboration and information sharing between and among federal, state, local, tribal agencies and with the private sector. Let me give you a few examples. At the heart of our counterterrorism enterprise is the watch listing process, watch listing and screening. The Terrorist Screening Center right now gets about 150 calls per day. These are different encounters that come up across the country, whether it's a police officer pulling somebody over and running their name through the different systems getting a hit, or somebody coming across our border through screening checkpoints, things like that. 30 to 40% of those encounters are positive matches to individuals on the terrorist watch list. And, you know, from 2005 to 2010, the number of encounters increased by 60%, reflecting better quality data and broader use of the watch list and the like. Another great example is the Nationwide Suspicious Activity Reporting Initiative. It's a flagship initiative of this office. Work closely with DOJ, FBI, DHS, our state and local partners, the fusion centers. There's been a tremendous push in the last year on training and scaling up the NSI, the Suspicious Activity Reporting Initiative. 150,000 uniformed officers across the country have gone through the training on the NSI. It's behavior-based, so training on the behaviors that are reasonably indicative of terrorism or criminal activity. Most of these are state, local, frontline officers, but it also includes 50,000 frontline personnel in DHS. An interesting vignette, Coast Guard has been training all of their uniformed personnel. They recently came back and said, you know, this training actually is appropriate for our civilian employees.
Let me jump in real quick, because I think one of the things that a lot of people talk about is when they think of information sharing, they think of that connecting the dots. That's the overused phrase. But what you seem to be talking about is the idea that the government is not just connecting the dots internally, but making their big circle, stretching it out, and not just saying, okay, well, tell us if you see something, but more it's a standards-based, the idea of information coming up and information flowing down.
One of the things that I love about this job every day is a civics lesson. We live in a federated democracy, whole of nation, whole of government. We're making that a reality here in our counterterrorism, homeland security, and public safety environment. The safety here, it's not just something for the federal government to do. It's for all of us to do in this country. And with the NSI, the Nationwide Suspicious Activity Reporting Initiative, really it's neighborhood watch for the nation. And the nation is involved in a way that is strengthening our security, making America safer, but also strengthening privacy and civil liberties protections. The NSI, as you know, is something that is strongly behavior-based. You have to be able to articulate behaviors that are reasonably indicative. It's community-based, local control, so there's local accountability. All of these are things that are strengths and play to our strengths in America, our federated democracy and our open society. Really, it's the kind of thing that was envisioned by the 9/11 Commission, the Markle Foundation, and the Intelligence Reform Act of 2004.
One criticism we've heard over the years, and I hear it less now than in the past, is the idea that the government was always just pulling information, giving us information, and then sending information back down, but it could only be heard by people with security clearances, and not enough local law enforcement officials had security clearances. Is having standards such as suspicious activity reporting or some of the other standards that have been out there kind of making that process easier, so that's not as, well, this is classified and this can only be seen by the mayor or the governor?
Yes, absolutely. And there's two sides to the question you're asking. One is the government's made a tremendous amount of progress on clearance reform. There's an executive order that's been out. We talked about it in the annual report that allows for state, local, industrial security programs, national security programs, so they can handle classified information. There's many more clearances that have been granted between DHS and FBI with state and locals. Also, you know, one of the things that, you know, that we highlighted in the annual report is last year with our partners at DHS and FBI and state and local partners did the first ever baseline capability assessment across the National Network of Fusion Centers. There's four critical operating capabilities that were highlighted and measured. The ability to disseminate sensitive time-urgent alerts, warnings, and notifications, including those that might be classified. The ability to do local risk assessment based on local conditions and criteria. Further dissemination to frontline individuals, law enforcement, public safety, first responders. And then the ability to gather information and share that through the network of fusion centers and with the federal government. It's really kind of a distributed architecture. And through that process, you know, we were able to, you know, actually measure increases in maturity along all those four dimensions to the point of, you know, can we effectively share information with state and locals? The answer is absolutely. We're measuring it, and, you know, the results are there to see.
You talk about that baseline assessment. Can you give us a sense of what you found? I mean, obviously, you had four measures. each of them are going to be a little different, but trends, give me a sense of how much maturity has happened over the last 5, 6, 7 years.
With our partners at DHS, and they're out in front on the, you know, the fusion centers, and with FBI, what we're finding is that fusion centers are maturing. It used to be that people would say, you've seen one fusion center, you've seen one fusion center. That's no longer the case. Right? There really is an increasing level of operational capability, of maturity in terms of these baseline capabilities and these critical operating capabilities. Now, not every fusion center is operating at the same level. You know, some fusion centers are more mature than others. Some fusion centers are more capable than others. But, you know, what we saw was actually quite heartening. Also, what happened is after we did the baseline capability assessment last year, DHS out in front, under Bart Johnson, Karen Wagner's leadership, you know, worked closely with the 72 fusion centers and the state and locals, our state and local partners, to develop mitigation strategies to quickly, you know, develop that uniform capability across the network. And so we saw that happen quickly. This is the beauty of being data-driven, of managing, right? You get past a lot of things that are maybe extraneous to the main event, which is improving the shared capability across the network. So we've seen that maturation happen. It's discussed in more detail in the annual report, and it's something that was good. A few other things that we saw. The fusion centers are really all crimes, all hazards. I mean, it has to make sense. A business case locally has to be broader than just the CT mission. So we're seeing a lot of that. Right, and there's synergy that occurs. You know, you see it with the Nationwide Suspicious Activity Reporting Initiative. A lot of the SARs that come in, you know, you don't know a priori if it's terrorism related or drug related, and so you need to have that kind of synergy reflected in how they operate to really get that business case for the state and locals, as well as the national business case for the CT mission.